After 32 years, I came out of the closet as a gay Christian pastor. Finally, on the outside of that suffocating prison, I'm looking around and I'm like, we can't stay here. It's not enough to become informed. We have to do something about the harm we're still witnessing within systems and spaces we've been loyal to for so long. It's time we become reformers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Confessions of a Reformer. I'm your host, Mike Miyashiro, and I've got another gay guy with me today. As you know, I'm doing the series, The Real Lives of Gay Men, and I have with me today, Ben Cardenas. Ben, you want to say hi?
Hi. Thank you again, Mike, for having me.
Of course. Wait, hang on. I need to check. Did I say your last name correctly? How would you say your last name?
I've always gotten it wrong my whole life. Cardenas, some of the gente here in New Mexico would say like Cardenas, you know?
Okay.
But yeah, Cardenas, that sounds good.
Cardenas.
Some people say Cardenas, and that's when I correct them. I'm like, no.
I just said Cardenas.
Oh gosh. It's okay.
Okay, so I have Ben Cardenas with me today. Hey. Ben, thanks for being here. So you're gay.
I've been told, and that's my experience. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so to kick us off, obviously I've been having conversations with different gay men about their lives and their experiences and just wanting to hear more from their end, what their journey has been like. And so I appreciate you stepping in and wanting to just share some of your story with the world. So first question off the bat, how did you first know you were gay, Ben?
So a little bit about me. I'm from Santa Fe, New Mexico, and it's a blue state, very liberal. But I was raised in a very, very conservative pocket in like the evangelical culture and community here. And so I knew something was up, you know, I feel like a lot of like other gay men, like, you know, they knew something was up, for me as early as maybe like 5 years old, which is kind of crazy. But I always knew of it as a struggle. And so I quote unquote struggled with homosexual desires and stuff, but it wasn't until like maybe freshman in college that I was able to look at myself in the mirror and say the G word, you know, that I was gay. And so I knew I was, but I didn't really accept it until like the fairly early years in college when I was at my university.
Okay. Okay. So I guess kind of in that same vein, I'm curious, what was your first crush like when you like first realized like, oh, I've got feelings for this boy?
Well, for a long, long time, I was involved in a theater, which we might get into more in a little bit. But there was one of the members there that I loved, you know, dearly. And it wasn't really like a lustful kind of thing. It was more just like a genuine, like, I love this person so much. I don't know. And I'm very loving, and that can kind of be to a fault, which we might get into later too. But anyways, but I saw a bit like, no, it's not good for me to have these feelings. It's not good. You know, even if it was pure, you know, Christ-like love, I still felt that shame around it all, you know, in the context of him being like a male, like a man, you know? And so, so it was kind of hard. First crush is kind of hard. You know, I've had other crushes, you know, like on celebrities and whatnot, but that he was like my first real, like, someone I knew kind of crush. And yeah. And in high school, I got the courage to confide in him. I didn't come out to him because, again, I was still like rejecting myself, you know. And but I did kind of tell him that I was, you know, struggling with homosexual thoughts and stuff. And that was enough for him to kind of like disregard me and distance himself from me. And so things have worked out now, you know, we're friends now. But yeah, so first crush. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you guys worked through it. You're friends now, but he was not interested. There was no reciprocation.
I don't know, because, you know, when you're younger, you have your own, you know, for all I know, he could have had his own, you know, internalized homophobia And so there's a lot of reasons to that. So
yeah,
I try to in that context, and it helps me just kind of be more understanding of it all, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Okay. So you said you grew up in a conservative evangelical pocket of Santa Fe. I imagine that came with its challenges. My next question is, growing up, what was the hardest part about being gay?
Yeah. And so it was hard because, like, Santa Fe especially is very progressive, and there's a prominent like queer community here. But for me, I wasn't really aware of any of that growing up. Like, the conservative like church culture was really my whole world, and it's crazy to think that, because now I look back and it was so small. My world was so small. And so it was feeling very unsafe talking to anyone, especially after I told like that crush, you know. It made me very afraid to tell anyone about anything that was going on with me. And it really kind of pushed me deeper and deeper in the closet until I felt like asphyxiated. Now I'm struggling how to say words. I felt like I couldn't breathe, you know? And so that was very, very challenging. Just like repenting, like all the time, like spending hours. I remember there was a period of, I think, 3 or 4 years when I was like an adolescent, that I would spend hours every morning in my room repenting to God, begging him to make me normal, because that's all I wanted. I just wanted to be quote unquote healed from this. And it kind of came to a point where the Lord was answering my prayers, you know, so from my understanding back then. And I attempted to hurt myself twice in high school because I felt very alone, very ashamed. And that didn't happen. And I'm very happy, you know, looking back, that didn't happen. So growing up was a little bit challenging. But yeah, again, when I got into college, that's when I was able to kind of be in a safe space at my university where I could meet other queer people and learn. And my world got a little bit bigger. And I started noticing things I didn't really notice before, like cherry blossoms in the spring, and you're really getting to see them again. And that beauty, you know, because my world was kind of black and white, and like color was kind of being introduced. Yeah, but growing up, that was a little tough.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a question about that. Now, feel free to, you know, not answer this if it's too uncomfortable. I don't want you to have to talk about something you don't want to, but I know on my end of, you know, speaking about being gay and the queer experience within evangelical spaces, in a public way, I get people from evangelicalism who say things like, people want to commit suicide, not because they're gay or not because how the church treats them, but because of sin. That's what sin does, right? Because like on the advocacy side of things, we try to help expose like, hey, toxic theology, anti-queer theology is really harmful for young queer youth, right? Like it makes them hate themselves. It like teaches them that they are worthless and gross and deserve to be punished or go to hell or whatever. And so that causes this really intense, negative, like harmful thought process that eventually leads many of us to self-harm, right? And sometimes suicide. So I guess I would like to ask you, from your vantage point and experience, what would you say to the evangelicals who are saying queer kids are not experiencing suicidal ideation or even attempting suicide or committing suicide, dying by suicide because of how the church treats them, it's because of sin? What would you say to that?
Well, it's funny because I've been told that a lot growing up and even now. And it's crazy because the same people that told me that are the same people that told me that I was a monster, that I was disgusting, that I was like a walking STD, like treated me very, very, very poorly. There was some things that happened in my early childhood, but I was threatened with to be put in foster care. And so it's just funny, all these people that told me all this stuff, you know, it's like, why? It's because of you. At the end of the day, it's like, no, it's really harmful. I'm kind of being put in a position where you can't stand up. You're like the woman caught in adultery and John, I believe. You're left defenseless. And so I don't know if I really answered your question. Could you say it one more time?
Well, yeah, I'm just like, what would you say to the idea that queer people, especially young queer people, are experiencing thoughts of suicide because of sin, not because of bad theology or the way that the church has treated them?
And I think if anything, that really pushes people more to a dark place because it invalidates their humanity. Like, this struggle is because of you. It's your fault. And death is a result of sin. You know, that's the final, I guess, symptom of sin. But it's not. You know, if anything, suicide's a final symptom of depression and mental illness. And, oh, man, I'm getting a little sweaty because it's just a lot. I'm also wearing a sweater in a warm room, but that's aside the point. But if I could encourage any like people, like if you know, like for example, Ben, when I was younger, to know that God loves, that God does love you, that you were created fearfully and wonderfully, and there's a beautiful reason why you're this way, you know. It's just one of the colors of the rainbow, and it has to be there in order for it to be a full rainbow. So you're needed here.
Aww, I love that. Okay, so obviously that's like a lot from the past. So, you know, from going through your own like journey of self-harm, obviously mental torment, your family threatening to put you in foster care, like that's a lot of really intense negative stuff to have to navigate at a young age. And then also growing up evangelicalism, I'm assuming you just continued to hear the anti-gay rhetoric in those spaces, right? Like gay people don't inherit the kingdom. They're abominations. They don't, you know, can't be saved. That kind of, like, did you hear those things growing up as well?
I did. And also having Bibles that are resonant with the 1946 movie, like ESV and other translations like that. Also clinging onto that because it's, you know, the word of God and it doesn't return void and it's inerrant, and clinging onto what I thought was, you know, the word of God. I've later learned to know that like it's been distorted and twisted and used to oppress people like me. But yeah, again, clinging onto that and reading all the clobber verses without question and just really just praying to be quote-unquote cleansed from this. It was it was a lot, and I feel like as I talk I'm going on a tangent, so I apologize if I'm going on a rabbit trail or maybe a rabbi trail. It's more kosher. I don't know.
Keep it kosher. Okay, so contrasting from your upbringing, my next question is, what would you say is the hardest part about being gay now for you?
The hardest part, oh man. Well, I came out, I want to say, I guess 5 years ago, whenever 2019 was, May 25th, 2019. And I came out publicly on Facebook, you know, and I've come out to, you know, people since then, obviously. And it was unfortunately a really traumatizing experience and like a big part of my diagnosis of PTSD that I'm still in therapy for. I've been in therapy for years now. And I was dismembered from the theater that I was in, like for a very, very long time. And I was a playwright and composer for them. We produced multiple shows and we were getting ready to do another one on the Book of Jonah. It was like a Bible kind of theater. And so that was my next show that we were doing. And it was kind of reminiscent of my testimony, you know, like feeling like God was silent to you, your whole life, and also being mistreated by your community, but realizing that God's always been there with you. So I was also engaged with someone at that time as well, a man. And shortly after I came out, months after I came out, the pocket that I was in really closed in on me, and I was just berated via email, calls, text messages, everything for months after that happened. And shortly after that, my fiance, he abruptly kicked me out with no reason. I begged for a reason, but you didn't give me one. And then the shutdown happened with COVID. And I met someone when I moved back to Santa Fe because I was going to college out of town. And so I moved back here and I met someone and we were together for a long time. And that ended about a year ago. And so now my struggle now would probably be just the loneliness you feel, maybe from loneliness of, I don't know, because I feel like everyone yearns to be loved by someone, and having that kind of be coming like not really happening for me after a few really serious efforts. So now I think for me, maybe the biggest struggle is just feeling very like alone and lonely. And so I've been really working on A, healing, and B, you know, working on myself, which is also, I guess, healing. But thirdly, also like surrounding myself with people that see me as a person. Because when I came out, the people I'd known forever, totally on a dime, didn't see Ben anymore. Didn't see Ben with his little newsboy cap, you know, singing his heart out for the Lord. They saw a walking STD. They saw just this stigma, their own stereotypes, you know, put onto me. And so now surrounding myself with people that do see me and that love me for who I am. And it's been really amazing. Actually, I met someone like about a year ago. We connected on Instagram and he ended up moving here and he's become my best friend. And that's an example of just putting yourself in even if it's a small community, you know, having that support, because it's really life enriching and really, it gives me a reason to keep going, if you will. And yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. Woo, man, Ben, your journey. By the way, did someone actually say to you or call you a walking STD?
Well, I guess not like verbatim, but a lot of people told me that I would get STDs and that I would die of HIV and AIDS. These are people after I came out. And I'm like, what? Where is this coming from? Like, I haven't talked to you in 15 years. What are you don't even know me. And wow. So again, you know, yeah. So, yeah. But I was told a lot of crazy stuff, which is now like, Jinx Monsoon says on Drag Race, water off a duck's back, you know? So now I'm like, say it to me. Cause I know who I am now. I know who I am. And that doesn't shake me. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, I guess kind of following the tail of that, what would you say you love about being gay?
Oh man. Well, this past coming out day, National Coming Out Day, October 11th, I believe this past October, I made a post on Instagram kind of reflecting on how life's been after coming out. And I remember typing that life hasn't gotten easier by any means, but it's gotten more authentic. And if anything, I'd rather have that than having an easier life. You know, having an authentic life, being able to know who I am and who I am, like in the eyes of God, you know, it's a beautiful, liberating thing. And I'm still going through like a lot of like stuff that, you know, but at the end of the day, like it's being able to live authentically. And that's been the biggest, I guess, to be reminiscent of Love, Simon, that movie and the book. I'm able to exhale now, and I've been exhaling for the past few years, and it's been amazing. And I do not regret coming out at all. I'm very thankful that I did.
Wow. Yeah, I love it. Okay, cool. Thank you. So one of the questions is, and I think you kind of answered this already, but have you ever been in a long-term relationship? And the answer is yes. What was it like?
Yeah. Would not recommend. Just kidding. Just kidding. No. I yearn to meet my person still. And I might be delusional, but I will find them. But I was in two long-term relationships, and I was engaged to the first guy and for about a year and a half. And things ended, but again, looking back, I'm thankful that I did, because it was kind of borderline emotionally abusive. And then with my second relationship, it was emotionally abusive in like Taylor Swift high infidelity kind of way. And so I have, and that's also why I'm in therapy too. just kind of healing from that stuff. Cause when I do meet my person, I want to make sure I'm fully healed from all of that stuff so I can bring my best self to the table, my best authentic self to the table. So yeah, I have.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the questions here, which sounds like it's very apropos, is what have you learned about heartbreak?
Well, apropos.
Sorry, appropriate.
I was thinking that like that stuff you put in the bathroom to make it smell good, but that's not.
Like potpourri?
Yeah. Very out of context. Very out of context. What was your question?
Sorry. Again? What have you learned? What have you learned about heartbreak?
What I learned about heartbreak is, oh man, these are awesome questions. These are really, really good questions. Just to really be confident in yourself. Like at the end of the day, that you're okay with whatever happens. You know, in my experience, people have left me like in an instant, and it's really pulled the rug from under me. But I really had to learn just to be okay, just to be okay. And where I'm at right now in my journey is that you know, Christ is my first love. And if I have him, then I have everything I need. So that's kind of where I'm at now. Just knowing that I'll be okay no matter what.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. So I guess I want to kind of step into that a little bit, what you just said. It's not in the questions I had here, but your faith, Jesus, that's come up a few times now. So I guess I'd love for you to get to share, you know, for everyone listening, whether they're just allies, they're other queer people, Christians or not, as a gay man, how has your faith played a part in you? Like for a lot of gay people, they had to walk away from their faith when they came out, right? Because their faith communities were so nasty and like rejecting and judgmental. For you, it seems like there's still something salvageable or redemptive about your faith, despite how you've been treated by the people in your faith community. Can you speak to like, how is that surviving for you? What does that look like?
Yeah. So again, like I'm kind of sifting through everything from my upbringing, you know, trying to sift through what was I conditioned to and what's organic and authentic and true for me. And it's, you know, it's still a journey. I know we've been working with each other for a little while, and I'm really thankful for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting, you know, watching 1946, reading all these books and just all like, just really, you know, again, you know, doing that self-work. Mm-hmm. My experience with Jesus and God has always been in the lens of evangelicalism and the translations we have now with ESV, KJV, what have you, NIV, what have you. And so just again, kind of really looking deeper into the original languages, like 1946 does a really good job at doing, and really putting things into context. And it's been a journey, and I'm so open to learning and hearing other people's perspectives, which is why I love you listening to your podcast, because I get a chance to do that with people I might not be able to meet. And but at the end of the day, I know that there is something out there that loves me and profoundly. And even if that's all I have, at the end of the day, that's enough for me to have a sense of purpose and to keep like loving others the way I feel like I've been loved. And that's kind of where I'm at now. Yeah.
Love that. That's awesome. Thank you. Oh, I love that. Okay. So this is kind of a funny left field question, but do you, and if so, how do you generally hit on other guys?
So, you know, you're familiar with Merriam-Webster in the dictionary. If you flip to the A, you know, one of the first pictures you see is a picture of me for awkward. Like, that's me. And so I've also been in experiences of unrequited love, and so I'm very afraid to make the first move because I don't want the other person to feel like, oh, well, I, you know, to be polite or what have you, to in order to talk with me. This is timely now, being single now. I'm just myself. And if I'm interested in someone, I really just ask them, like, you know, what, so how is, oh gosh. I don't know. Just trying to be myself. So as far as hitting on someone, I don't really do that. I just kind of have, you know, meaningful conversations, because I know if I were to do that, holy guacamole, that would be awkward. Woo!
Ben, that's a valid answer. You could simply say, I don't do that. No, I don't hit on people.
Maybe our next session, you know how to answer things more concisely, because that was awesome. I don't do that. I don't do that.
Yeah, just to acknowledge, Ben is a coaching client of mine, so that's where he's coming, where the working together thing is coming up from. Ben, I guess I want to ask you this as well, just given, you know, who's listening. There's some cultural diversity going on here too. Would you care to speak to how potentially your culture plays into your experience, positive or negatively, about, you know, being a gay guy?
Yeah, so being in Santa Fe, I am of like a Spanish background. And so the culture that I have been raised in is like a collectivist culture, very communal. And so when I came out, that was something against the collective, and that was a big old deal. And so now, still with family, I'm working on this. And even if that means setting boundaries and distancing myself from certain people, or just not engaging with people that have like harmed me in the past, just really, my culture here is beautiful. You know, green chili, chicken enchiladas, you know, like the smell of hatch green chili driving down Cerritos Road, the sunsets, the aspen trees. But I don't know, I feel like our generation, like this like large chunk of young adults, I think like we're doing a really good job at breaking the mold. And I think like culture might be one of them. I grew up in a very, you know, again, collectivist culture. And with that, there is also kind of similar to evangelicalism, a lack of boundaries and a lack of self-respect and self, even identity. And so kind of breaking those molds for myself in order to live the life that I am striving for. That's been my biggest hurdle, and also kind of challenging that has been kind of fun in a sense.
Mm. Nice. Okay, cool. Thanks for sharing that. Ben, do you want to fall in love?
Yeah. Will it happen? Who knows? But I would. And if you're listening out there, I'm just kidding.
we'll put Ben's email address in the show notes so you can reach out.
No. I really do. And the last person I was with, it really shook me when things ended, because I love so much. I said that earlier, like sometimes to a fault. And so I'm excited to meet someone. But until then, I'll be working on myself and healing from everything. But yeah, that's my hope.
Yeah.
I might be delusional. That's my hope.
Okay, my last question for you, Ben, before we land this plane. What are the top three traits you would ideally like to have in somebody you would fall in love with? If you like had to think, okay, these are things that I find to be the most important, the most meaningful, the most attractive. So I'm not necessarily talking physical, unless that's up there for you, but you get to pick. I'm talking personality trait, characteristics, integrity, physical looks, values, interests. Like, what are your top three? I know this is not in the script, but what are like three of your main things you're looking for in a significant other?
I think empathy is probably one of them, because I'm very empathetic, and in order for me to feel seen and I would like to have someone that is empathetic, funny. I love to make people laugh. Like my little sister, for example, I love making her laugh and to cheer her up when she's having a hard day. But yeah, but to have someone help me, you know, cheer me up when I'm having a hard day, and because I get tired of my own jokes. And thirdly, someone who's really, I guess, aiming towards authenticity, like I am, you know, just so there's no shame in our relationship. There's no having to hide. There's no having, you know, there's just a pure sense about it all. So yeah, maybe top three. There's other ones.
Okay, so I'm gonna recap for you. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, Chris Evans, if you're listening, I know you're married, but things don't work out.
I know you're straight and married, but still. All right. So your top three are empathetic, funny, and striving toward authenticity.
Yeah.
Nice. I like it. I think the way you said that last one is really helpful, actually. That's great. Ben, thank you so much for doing this interview with me. I guess as we close, what is one thing you'd like the world to know about being a gay man that you're like, I just feel like people need to know this?
Oh gosh.
No pressure.
No pressure. Like I said, when I came out, I was able to notice the cherry blossoms and the sunsets were more vibrant. So for me, I feel like I add a lot of color to people's lives, I'd hope. And so I'm writing a new show, actually. It's called The Hue of Tears. I've been writing it for a long time now, but it's getting more momentum, and it's about my life. And so how, I don't know, at the end of the day, the show is about how life is worth living, and no matter what. And so yeah, I think that's like my main kind of message.
Yeah, wow, I love it. Ben, thank you so much for being here. I so appreciate you adding your voice and your story to the mix, and your vulnerability and your lightheartedness. Your humor is so endearing. Thanks for being here. And you listeners, thank you so much for listening. Obviously, if you could like and comment and rate and share the podcast, that'd be helpful. We appreciate you being here, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Listen, there's more where this came from. If you want to dive deeper, check out mikemyashiro.com.